Hey, welcome to the Happy Rant Podcast. I am Ted Kluck, joined as always in studio by my good friends, my partners in radio, and my partners in the coffee business, Barnabas Piper and Ronald J. Martin. Boys, how does it feel to be coffee moguls again? I got out of bed this morning with a renewed spring in my step, knowing that I was doing once again what I was put on this earth to do, which is being in the coffee business. Thanks to a brand new partnership with Redbud Coffee. Ronald, give us your just initial reactions on it, and then we'll let Piper do his inaugural promo for Redbud
Coffee.
Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, I think when we look at what we've achieved from a business sense, I think if we don't have coffee somewhere in the mix, I feel like there's a part of us that's lacking, that we're not really fulfilling not just the Great Commission, which is what we do on this broadcast, but the other commissions that we've been given in this life, which is to promote good product.
Hipster coffee. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's part of my sensibility, even though I'm not really a coffee snob whatsoever. I'm still a Folgers guy. Yep. But that's okay. And I would like to hear on a professional.
Are you a Folgers guy, or do you just like the Folgers persona? Like, it's the one thing about you that's every man.
I just don't like people putting me
Piper,
in the box.
Piper, that's fascinating.
Because I'm an Enneagram 4 Pipe. I mean, you know that.
I have a really hard time imagining, Ronnie, I like delicious things, Martin, drinking Folgers. I really can imagine Ronnie having a can of Folgers on his exposed plank shelf just to adorn his
kitchen. But it's part of the so not cool, it's cool, you know?
So, yeah, it's part of the hipster-like theology of... Yeah, a thing being retro, a thing being not cool, therefore it's cool. Now,
here's
Piper, I want to lean into
hold
this.
Hold on.
Yeah, go ahead.
Let me hold on. I don't care about coffee. Coffee is just bitter, hot liquid to me no matter what. Mm. So it doesn't matter if you give me good coffee or bad coffee, because I need to milk and sugar that stuff up to where it's whatever the quality, you know, of the beans are going to get lost in that anyway.
Real talk here. Do you feel like that, in a sense, impedes your ministry to hipsters, being that you don't like coffee? You know what I'm saying? Because I feel like there's a real elephant in the room when you try to kind of minister to the people that you're trying to minister to, because they are, by and large, such coffee aficionados. Do you feel like this is a hindrance, stumbling block?
I mean, it could be. Okay. I mean, there's no doubt about that. It could be, except for when I sit down and I talk to, so-called coffee snobs, and they look at me assuming that I am. And I get to sort of burst their bubble with that. That's it sort of puts me on like a different plane with that. So I'm the coffee snob against coffee snob.
Oh, wow. That is fascinating. Now, Piper, I want to go back to something that you mentioned, which was maybe this is the one thing in Ron's life that keeps him sort of grounded with the everyman in the midst of all the shiplap and Yoda tweets and trips to Naples and just all the kind of superstar stuff that we see him engaged in week in and week out. Now, explore that a little bit. I think that's fascinating.
Yeah, I feel like, Ronnie is, he has a very, it's a very curated life. And so there has to be that one thing that, you know, that lives on the shelf that he looks at it, you know, he can go by and like the Notre Dame players slap the play like a champion today sign. Yeah. Like Ronnie goes by and just touches the Folgers can. Oh. It's like, you know what? I am an everyman in the middle of Ohio.
Brilliant pipe.
I am one of these people.
That's brilliant.
I think that's what it is for him. And his whole, like, I don't actually like coffee. Actually, I think supports that theory because if he really liked Folgers, that's a whole different discussion. So I think it's an ethos, a groundedness, a tie back. Maybe it's the coffee that his dad drank. Like there's something there that's very like this is a rooting, grounding thing for him.
Now it's important though to make it not look like a curated life. So there's going to be a problem with that comment off the air. So we can discuss that in our post production meetings.
Yeah,
are extensive.
I'll take heat off the air. That's fine.
Totally.
I have a sneaking suspicion that whatever this coffee can is was one that was like found in the woods while he was on one of his walks, and it's just like sort of a half rusted can, and he came home and tenderly cleaned it, and now
don't know me.
He had to get it out of the shot incredible. Of a perfect like Instagram forest walk.
Four
picture.
Years on this program, and you guys literally are clueless. It was unbelievable.
It was inconveniently close to a colorful mushroom he wanted to take a picture of or something.
Gosh, man, just. go watch your football and do your rock and roll. Go.
Effortless. Effortless life, baby. Piper, also effortless is how enthusiastically we get to talk about Redbud Coffee, because I'm not going to lie, when we parted with Ligaris, I felt like a part of me had died.
Yeah, it was a real identity crisis there. You know, you guys were talking about how you felt like it was part of who you are to do this coffee thing. Yeah, I was just sort of floating. It's, you know, like you I don't know. I was just sort of spinning in circles, wondering what happened next. And then,
Dark Knight
and
of the Soul
Connor
was.
From Redbud.
Piper, it's okay. You can get married now. I mean, you're exactly. All clear now.
I'm a whole man again.
Exactly. Correct.
So, Piper, tell us about Redbud. I'm excited to hear about this.
Yeah, listeners. So Redbud Coffee is a smaller family-owned coffee roastery. They're right in the middle of Illinois. It is in Auburn, Illinois, which none of you know where that is, which is great. That's part of what makes them great, is that they're just it's a man named Connor, and then I think it's his brother and his uncle and his dad, maybe. It's all family who run this thing, and then employees. So they bring in beans from mostly Central and South America, at least currently, although I think they rotate those. So currently they have Costa Rican beans, Costa Rican roast, Brazilian, Colombian. They do have an Ethiopian. That's not Central and South America. I know geography. And then Mexico.
The ones you mentioned.
Yes. Those are all their best ones. Those are also all of them. They work really hard to make sure that everything they bring in is ethically sourced, just so they try to have as direct a line as possible with the farmers to make sure that everybody's paid fairly. And then they have one additional cool partnership that we don't have anything directly to do with this, but they have it set up. So it's just a cool thing where a dollar from every purchase goes to an organization called Aruna, who works with survivors of sex trafficking. So they are partnering and supporting that organization. And so we get to sort of have a double partnership here. But if you want to learn more, go to redbudcoffee.com, and then they have the code HAPPYRANT set up where you can get 10% off of any purchase. So just use the code HAPPYRANT at checkout, get 10% off. So that's coffee. They have some mugs. They have some different things there. But again, it's redbudcoffee.com. We will have this in the show notes on the website. We'll plug it in on just our standard show page so you can find it there. But Redbud Coffee, and then don't forget to use the code HAPPYRANT to get your discount. We just got this set up in the last couple days, so I haven't even had a chance to sample their wares yet. But I am functioning in total and complete faith that it will be delicious, and I'm excited.
We're going to rule the coffee industry with Redbud. We're gonna put Starbucks out of business. We're putting Tim Hortons out of business. We are gunning for them, and we will go straight to the top. Boys, I'm excited to sip my first cup of Redbud coffee very, very soon. Piper, as always, you've crushed that promo because, in part, you are a writer, and you understand how words work. And I want to talk about an issue pertaining to writers that, Piper, you sent this along, I think, last week, a little dust-up on Twitter. Now, I don't know who any of these people are. You're going to have to explain to me who these people are. I feel like they have blue checks next to their name, meaning they're more important than at Jared C. Wilson and Ronald and myself, who we do not have blue checks of any kind next to our names. But so someone named Morgan Jenkins, is she anybody?
I don't know who she is. I'm gonna look.
Is she like
her
Jerry
up.
Jenkins?
Oh,
daughter?
It's Morgan. It's Morgan Jerkins.
Oh, my bad. Terrible radio by me.
Yeah.
Okay. Same question though. Is she anybody?
Although Jenkins sounds better than Jerkins, so I don't. You know.
Yeah.
Okay. She is a senior editor at Zora Mag. I don't know what that is. And Medium, which is like a web platform for writers. Mm-hmm. She is a New York Times bestselling author of This Will Be My Undoing. Maybe that refers to this tweet. So she's, I think, and then she has a new book coming out in May. So she's an author, writer, editor. So she, yeah, I mean, she's in the biz. She knows a thing or two about a thing or two.
Thing or two about a thing. And she says this about writers. Yeah. She says, writers do not date or invest any significant amount of energy into a person who does not read your work. That's big. And then Ruth Graham, who I assume is also somebody, but also somebody
that
I don't know.
She's a columnist, writer, She writes for Slate and is
Slate.
She's also a very clever tweeter. She's a fun follow.
Yeah, she said, if my husband misses even a single blog post, so help me God. Now you boys are writers. You're both in significant relationships. What do you make of this? Do you make your significant other read all your stuff?
Ronnie, I'm going to allow you to take.
Yeah,
this
no,
first.
I mean, not even close. I mean, I don't want to put her through that kind of agony. Yeah. I mean, I love my significant other more than making her, you know, go through that kind of torture. But, I don't know, man. See, like coming from the music thing and man, all those albums. And I mean, I never subjected her to any of those kinds of things. It was just, it's like, hey, if you want to hear something, you know where to find me, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's the same with the writing. It's like sometimes I'll like give her something to proof. I'll say, hey, how does this mm-hmm. sound? Is this, do you like this?
Yeah.
I'll do it on that level, but I don't do it like, okay, this book is finished. I expect you to read it. I expect you to tell me how great of a writer I am and how much I've improved. I mean, I'm not looking to get any of that from her. But you know, if she wants to read it, it's up to her. I mean, guess what? I'm still going to invest in our marriage, whether she reads it or not. I mean, I'm not putting the marriage on hold until like every single word is read and digested and critiqued and, you know, used as a way to tell me how awesome I am. So yeah, you know, I'm good. We're stronger than that. We're better than that. You know?
Wow. All right. Piper, what about you? You're entering into a new phase as an engaged man. Have you and your lady had the all important, are you going to read every word of what I write conversation yet? I'm sure that was like date stuff, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it was in the first three dates. Yeah. Cause when we started going on, she didn't know that I was an author, and that, you know, that was a major setback. Like I had to, it's kind of like not being a coffee mogul for a while. I was kind of lost and unsure how to handle things.
And then you explained to her that you have a blue check next to your name and, you know.
Yeah, then we went out for dinner, and I just laid out my books on the table, and I said, "Look, this is what it takes.
Begin reading,
yeah,
please.
I expect you to have read one by the time I see you again next." Yeah, and
a little homework.
You know, she was cool. Actually, that's the exact opposite of how it happened. She didn't know I was an author. She found out kind of either through conversation with me, because I said I had a writing project. She was like, "Oh," and I just sort of gave this is generally what I do, mm-hmm. and then she just sort of looked at me and goes, am I supposed to read your books or something to that effect? I don't want to put words in her mouth. And I was like, if you want, try one. If you don't like it, you know, just don't tell me. And so I think she's sort of dabbled around in them. But yeah, no expectation there. The thing about this tweet that amused me most was, okay, so do not date somebody or marry somebody who doesn't, you know,
is that what it
does
said?
Not read your
what,
work.
What
it says, writers do not date or invest any significant amount of energy into a person.
Into a person. So here's where I go. Like, Ronnie and I both work at churches now. We have a responsibility to invest a fair amount of energy into people. Like, that's what we do. I feel like this is really going to make my job easier because I now just get to ask people, have you read my books?
And if they say no, then you can ignore them.
Leave my office. Exactly. Why are you here? What are you even doing here? I think my kids, I either get to make them read my stuff or I get to ignore them. This is great.
It's empowering.
This is the answer to the toxic human question. You know, how do we deal with toxic people? We ask them if they've read our stuff. If the answer is no, we erase them from our lives.
It means they're
this
toxic.
Is great.
If you don't approve,
yeah, you
my
are
work,
toxic. You don't support my writing by purchasing it.
Absolutely,
it's great character quality there. You know,
yes.
Now, Ted, how do you handle this on the home front? Is this sort of like how you police your wife's watching? Like we discussed a couple
that's
episodes
right.
ago.
Yeah, you do
like,
police her.
I don't.
You need to turn that off and read my latest article instead.
Absolutely, I just throw the television like out the window and like replace it with all my books. And she gets the idea. But no, she so when KK met me, I was 19 years old. I was a sophomore in college, and I had never written a dang thing in my life, nor did I have any aspirations to write anything. So KK really got the old bait and switch in the sense that she had no idea she was marrying a writer. And therefore, I had no expectations, really, that she would read any of my stuff, especially since my first three books were sports books. So my first book was about Mike Tyson, and I was fairly certain she didn't care who Tyson fought in 1989, nor did she care to read like deep dive interviews with those people. So we kind of set the precedent early of her not reading my stuff. But from time to time, she will. Like if I write anything having to do with her or the family or just like reform culture, something she thinks will be funny, then she's totally on board to read it. And she's always really encouraging. She's like, she's the best kind of editor in that she laughs in the right places. And I think truly she likes my stuff. And even if we weren't married, she would like my stuff. But she does make really helpful comments from time to time. Like she has a really good ear for tone and when I sound like a douche, and I don't necessarily know it myself. So she's really helpful on that level. She's kept me out of
it. It's like the best, worst sort of feedback, because usually if you're like me, the moments when you sound the most like that are the ones you were like, you were really proud of that line.
Oh, totally.
And so when you're told to take it out, it's just like, oh, come on. That was good.
You know what, though? I'm old enough now, and I've taken enough beatings that I really do want to be saved from myself, though. So she has full like artistic license to save me from myself, and I very much appreciate it. So yeah, she reads like just enough to make me feel good about being a writer, but yeah, she's not reading all the sports stuff and even all the, you know, goofy like gut check stuff that I write with Zach. She's not reading all that, but she does a good job. She likes enough of it. So Morgan Jerkins, good luck finding somebody to read all of your work. I feel like I should read some of her work now just to see if, like, you know, it's realistic to think that there's a person that would read all of it. But anyway, yeah, interesting stuff. Speaking of work, one of our colleagues, contemporaries, I don't know what we're calling Owen Strachan, but one of a guy who's about our age, who's in the reformed world, has written some work about 1917. This is what Owen Strachan said in his own tweet about his article. He said, 1917 is a powerful and deceptively theological metaphor of life in a fallen world. Honor is all that is left of a life when it ends. Rest is found only where trees flourish. I don't know what really any of that means. And what's more, I'm for sure not going to read Owen Strachan's article about it. But it's interesting to me, boys. I'll start by saying I do want to see this movie. I heard that it was an all-in-one-shot movie, like Hitchcock's film Rope, which I find fascinating given that it's, you know, about what it's about. But it strikes me, and you boys speak to this, I feel like reformed dudes are only good with consuming lots of pop culture when it can be turned into an intellectual exercise and they can get a white paper out of it. And I think the best reformed couples are the reformed couples that like eat chips and watch TV and watch movies together at night. They seem to like each other the most, which, call me crazy, I think liking your spouse is a big deal. And I like mine, and we do a lot of that stuff together. So Strachan has written at length about 1917. What do you boys make of it? Pipe, what are your thoughts?
I don't know. I saw this tweet and my first thought was, man, now I want to see this movie less.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Which seems to be the cumulative effect. So this is not a direct shot at Owen for tweeting this as much as it is the sort of movement of reformdom just way overthinking things. Mm-hmm. That can just be a good time. And I recognize there, you know, movies are also art and there's themes and there's so much depth to them. But there's just it's just like a drone of responses to them that takes the enjoyment out of them. And so like when I see these just way over theologized responses to a movie about war, mm-hmm. directed by Sam Mendes, who as far as I know is not a particularly theologically oriented person, I just kind of go, I think you missed the point.
Piper,
you missed a point.
Let me ask you a follow-up question, because what you said was really interesting. Why do you think reformed dudes love war so much? These guys love war. I think they're bummed that like we haven't had a big one to like get all heroic about. Why the fascination from reform guys in war?
Oh, I'm sure there's a direct tie to – so I think it's twofold. One is the other thing that Reform guys talk about loving is poetry.
Yeah.
You know, I know, Ted, you enjoy some poetry. I think Ronnie does as well. I do. Mm-hmm. But I don't know anything about poetry. I just like some of it and dislike some of it.
Same.
So I think what they're trying to do is take this fascination with poetry, which is a thing that does not come naturally to most Reformed guys,
yeah,
and then take something that's war, which is like it's just like a one-to-one comparison to theology. You have like good versus evil, everything. They're sort of black and white. There's occasionally an ethical issue. There's heroes. There's villains. There's whatever. Like, war movies draw the clearest lines possible.
That's true.
Between – you know, who you're rooting for and who you're rooting against.
Yeah.
Unless it's Inglourious Basterds, and then it's a little fuzzy. But so they get the mashup of like, I'm going to try to poeticize this just ham-handed metaphor over here.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of mash it up. And so I think on the war side, it just comes naturally because it's so easy. It's like sports.
Yeah.
You know, you've got like people lined up on opposite sides competing for victory.
Yeah.
That's a lot like the spiritual life. And then you got poetry, which is all very fuzzy and beautiful. I mean, even the way he wrote it, like something about where trees flourish or whatever. I'm like, yeah, okay, you know, Robert Frost. But it's you bring that into this. And it just seems like the most Reformed theologian thing ever to be like, I'm going to try to poeticize a thing that is just – the most blunt object of a metaphor ever.
I feel like these guys see one movie a year and they get really excited because it's fun to go see a movie.
Well, you can't. How many movies can you see when you're reading the 11-volume Winston Churchill biography? Like, you just don't have any time.
They see one movie a year. They get super pumped about it. They go home and they write their like 4,000-word white paper, and it's just the excitement's like pumping out of them. You know, it's big. Ronald, what do you make of this? Reform dudes in movies.
Yeah, it's weird, fellas, because it brings me back to kind of my 1980s evangelical upbringing, which was this, you know, you guys remember Focus on the Family.
Oh,
so
yeah.
My parents would get this like monthly journal, and everything would get reviewed and rated. And it was like sort of this attempt to try to Christianize everything so that we can justify the things that are part of culture that we are allowed to actually view and look at and watch. So if we can just draw something, you know, positive and something, you know, family oriented from it, or we have to find some like intrinsic value that aligns with biblical principles so that we can feel like it's okay for us to dip our toe into culture in a way that's not going to be harmful for our kids and our family. And so, I mean, maybe that's putting a fine point in it, but I feel like this is just an extension of that, mm-hmm. which is that the Christian community still does it. Now we've allowed ourselves more license in what we've deemed, you know, permittable or permissible in terms of watching. And so, but when I see all these reviews and it's always like that, here's how the gospel comes out in, you know, the new Terry Malick film. And Terry's a lovely man. We know that. But I think it's just like it's always back to that mentality where it's like, I understand trying to find something that we consider to be redemptive in a more like spiritual or biblical sense.
Yeah.
But sometimes I think we can, you know, we can just sort of like whitewash any of the artistic intent that's put into any of these, you know, efforts. And so, I don't know, I come at it from thinking of it, you know, on that level or from that angle, because I grew up again with that, just you always had to find a justifiable reason why it was okay to receive something, accept something. And because, you know, I think the Christian community and it doesn't look at anything, doesn't look at artisticness as being a value in and of itself.
Right. Yeah, so true.
We have to add something to it to justify it.
Yep.
And I think that I think there's something good about that. And I think there's something kind of unhealthy about that. And again, that's not saying, hey, we should just put anything in front of our eyes. It has no effect. It's all just art. I mean, that's going too far the other way with it. But I think we can use discernment. And I think that's what this is about. Mm-hmm. Is trying to have, I think, a good and healthy discernment that ultimately is grounded in theology and the Bible and Jesus. But it's also being able to have eyes that can, you know, receive some things that, by the way, you know, this film wasn't made, you know, with any sort of probably Christian intent, to be drawn from.
Yeah.
And maybe it was, I don't know. I haven't read all the reviews, but man, this kind of stuff always just, it doesn't interest me. So like when I see reviews like that, that's a personal thing for me, fellas, is that I just have no interest in that side of it, to be quite honest.
Yeah. Well, and that it's a really great point given how you grew up and how probably a lot of us grew up in the 80s, where there was all this like moral calculus that had to be done on the front end of consuming anything. And yeah, focus on the family, like kisses the movie on the ring and says, you know, it's okay for you to go see it. And maybe it's even like good for you to go see it. And then people would like stampede to the theaters to see those things. But yeah, I can totally see being burned out on that. And, let me ask you boys another question, and we may not know the answer to this, but what do you think is the most like banal, trite movie to ever get white papered about by one of these reform dudes? Like what's the Mendoza line for like banal entertainment?
That's a great question.
Yeah.
That's a really good question.
I've got an idea, but I want to hear from you guys.
I don't know that I can think that quick on my feet. I mean, I'll probably come up with something after hearing you boys riff on it for a minute.
Yeah. Pipe, do you have any ideas?
I have to imagine somebody has white papered like the friendship of Harry and Lloyd from Dumb and Dumber or something like that. I don't recall seeing it, but it seems like a possibility. Other than that, it's gotta be like cartoons. Like there was articles about Frozen and stuff like that, which
it's hard
to critique those movies because those are really awesome movies for kids.
Yeah.
So to drag them into the theologizing of things is a very strange thing to do. But I would have to imagine it's like a Disney movie, Frozen, something like that would be on.
Yeah, that's good.
Those are the ones that come to mind.
Dude, see, I was thinking more along the lines of like The Dark Knight, like some Chris Nolan thing. Cause I feel like if Chris Nolan is like the faux deep guy of right now, like if you want to see a movie that's going to make you feel like kind of faux deep and that you can wax philosophical about, it's
yeah, Nolan is the art house guy that's been able to like make his art house movies commercial. It's exactly what he
did. Well, we've talked about this. I don't know if it was an episode that Ron wasn't on. I only remember having the conversation with you, Ted. Mm-hmm. So Ronnie, forgive me if my memory just sucks, but
it's unbelievable.
We were talking about how Nolan makes these movies that are immensely popular and immensely shallow.
Yeah.
Because they are not character driven.
Right.
They're plot driven.
Yep.
They are concept driven because he's like, I want to twist time in this movie or kind of rearrange memory. But the people in the movies are just kind of like, nyeh. And so when people are like, but what about Heath Ledger's The Joker? I'm like, that's not a character that he wrote. That's a performance of a villain kind of thing. It was a great performance.
Yeah.
Not a great character.
I agree. Yeah. No.
Yeah, Nolan's definitely one of those guys who will trick people into thinking they're deep, and they're not usually.
I think that's so marketable, you know. And that was like what we did at Brisk Business Inn in the 90s was faux depth, you know, and everybody kind of walking around feeling tormented and thoughtful when in fact, like they really weren't. I think you'll always be able to sell that. So tip of the cap to Chris Nolan.
I think that's where war movies come in because they are. They allow you to sort of look at, like, it's not a faux depth, but it's a very obvious sort of window into, like, look, bravery.
Yeah, yeah, you know, for sure.
Look, cowardice. Look, right. You know, friendship. And as opposed to something that you have to sort of sort through, setting aside everything that Ronnie said, which I totally agree with, that we're just not comfortable with letting artistry and beauty be qualities on their own. And so, yeah, I think it's a lot easier to deal in those movies than it is something that's kind of complex and muddy, like, say, Manchester by the Sea, which I don't recall seeing a lot of think pieces about, but it was an absolutely incredible movie for a million reasons.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not as clear cut. I think that's a great thing. I mean, when you talk about war movies, you really get down to sort of like the basics of like humanity. So you're talking about life and death and loyalty and, you know, heroic feats of like, you know, you know, strength under pressure. I mean, so it's all of those. They're actually, I mean, they're deep but basic themes.
All the stuff that we don't allow our kids to ever experience because we're too busy sheltering them to high heaven.
Because we don't let them play on the lawn anymore.
Yeah, because we don't let them go outside anymore. But hey, bravery. Bravery's good. As long as you're white papering about it.
Well, that's a whole other discussion, right? Like,
dude, letting, it really is.
Yeah, that's a whole other... We could riff on that for a couple of hours.
Well, yeah, sure. Bravery is now stating an opinion and then telling people they can't fight back at you. Like, that was my brave opinion. Yeah. You don't get to say anything.
Yeah.
So, yeah, bravery has changed shape dramatically since, you know, rescuing people from a trench in World War One.
Definitely. Now it's just having a hot take on Twitter. That's the brave thing to do.
Are we brave for doing this podcast?
No,
we can't be brave because we're middle-aged, straight, white men who are Christians.
I remember the rules of bravery.
That's one of the rules.
So confused.
The rule number one is we can never be brave.
I think if we were braver, we would have less listeners, to be quite honest. So
would we be brave if we called ourselves feminists? Would that be brave?
Totally.
I mean, braver, sure.
Okay.
That's the brave.
I'm just trying. I'm again trying to kind of triangulate where bravery lies for middle-aged white dudes. So it's puzzling.
I think what's brave about what we do is that we hold ourselves just enough in check so that we sort of dip our toe into all these lines that could be crossed. You know,
but we don't
miles
cross
over
them. I think you're
we
right.
don't cross we them. We dip
we
our
smudge the line.
We smudge
don't cross
the line.
The line.
So that's there's a we're very. I think we're. Yeah, we keep it closer to the vest than I think some people that would listen to the program upon first listen would think that we do. So,
did you know what we are in that? We are the Christopher Nolan of bravery.
We are
You're
the
faux brave.
Christopher Nolan of bravery. Podcasting is what we are.
Christopher Nolan is also far. A middle-aged white man. So we have that. We have still yet more in common with Christopher.
Just far enough, but not too far.
Exactly. No,
which I mean, good. You could describe all of reformedom except for those. You know, just crazy hyper ends that we don't want to have anything to do with, right?
Yeah, yeah. Man, fascinating. We've done good work today. We should do a whole ep on bravery. Because I would love to suss this out more with you guys. And
the bravery app, man. I like
it. Yeah, the bravery app. Ascertain what's brave. Ascertain, like, as middle-aged, straight, white, Christian men, like, what we can even access in the bravery realm anymore. I don't think there's much.
But. And does bravery change? I mean,
absolutely.
Does it change with the culture? I mean, because, you know, none of us have gone to war. We haven't sort of practiced any sort of bravery on that level of things.
Now, what about the culture war? Have we gone to the culture war? Does that count? Like, is that a brave thing?
I haven't gone to it. I think I've, like,
I don't know.
Fled to Canada in the culture war.
Yeah, I'm a draft dodger for
exactly.
The culture war.
I'm a conscientious objector.
Objector. I mean, can you really be is there such a thing as, like, I mean, you could argue, is writing even brave? You know what I mean?
No.
Just like, you know, words on paper. I mean, is there something, can you write things that'll get you in hot water or get you in trouble or kind of make you controversial? Yeah, but
nothing
really
can
brave?
Get you in hot water anymore because people forget after 7.5 seconds. Just look at the entire MO of our current presidential regime is to make people mad and then make them mad in a new way 8 minutes later so they forget the last way they were mad. And so you just roll it forward, and it's worked for 3.5 years.
So if that's the new bravery, then really, like, true bravery now is to not be brave in those ways. We're getting real existential now.
We're getting
very
existential.
Let's save this for a bravery episode. Let's do a bravery episode where we get all existential and suss all this mess out.
You know what we've done?
I'm intrigued.
We've gone from being Chris Nolan, which is shallow but understandable, to Terry Malick, which is deep. But completely incomprehensible. We're the Terry Malick of radio.
And insufferable. We are insufferable now.
Exactly.
Why don't we just start?
Makes us lovely men.
So,
why
boys,
we why don't we change our opinion on some of those things, though, and just say, in actuality, Malick's really not that deep, you know?
Oh, that would be a hot take.
Why is it assumed because of his lack of dialogue and all in the real, like, you know, ambient soundtrack that goes on throughout the whole film that somehow means, you know, the content is deep, but that doesn't necessarily mean anything.
How dare you suggest that Terry Malick isn't the deepest?
Guys, am I still a Christian for saying that? Am I still saved?
I don't know. Yeah,
do I still remain redeemed by the blood of Christ?
Here's a theory. Here's a hot take. As an older white man, being incomprehensible and faux deep is the only card you have left to play. which
as
I think is why
Terry pants for the water. So my soul
long after Terry Malick.
Terrence Malick.
Oh, I love Judas, it. Boys,
pipes, there is therefore like now no quiet. Condemnation for those who are in Terrence Malick.
I love it. I love
it. Yeah, we can we'll just keep rewriting some scripture in accordance with Terry. The gospel boys, according to Terry.
We are nearly out of time, thank goodness. But
that's what our listeners say too.
Let me give you one scenario, and I want you to tell me if it's brave or if it's stupid. So let's say you're a famous Hollywood actor. You've been in such hits as Swingers and Wedding Crashers, and you are trying to take in the national championship football game at the New Orleans Superdome like a gentleman. And you happen to be a few seats away from the President of the United States, and you lean over and shake his hand. Is that courageous? Is it stupid? Is it just shaking the president's hand? Which I feel like. So my buddy Matt was over last night, and we were talking about this, and we both agreed that I feel like I would shake any president's hand. Like if you put me in a room with any president that we've had, I'm probably shaking his hand. That's kind of a big deal, and maybe that's just a function of being, again, middle aged and growing up in an era where we still cared about the president and thought it was a big deal. But Vince Vaughn, the actor, getting killed, getting canceled all over the culture because he shook Donald Trump's hand at a football game. Pipe, what do you make of this?
Yeah, I feel like if we can cancel somebody for shaking a hand, I mean, it's not like he's, as far as we know, it's not like he set up a meet, you know, so it's not like visiting North Korea to call somebody your friend who is one of the world's worst dictators, for example. Like, that seems troublesome to me.
Sorry, guys.
I'm canceled.
Exactly.
Not brave.
My bad.
And, but to be, you know, in proximity to a world leader and not show them the respect, just, it feels petulant to me. So yeah. to take the step of shaking somebody's hand doesn't, it just feels like respectful. It's just polite. Mm-hmm. You know, if somebody's at your house and they're being a total jerk, you still probably will respond to them politely, you know, and sort of treat them with decency, and because that's what humans should do. So yeah, I don't understand the fervor over it. Like it's not a political statement to shake a hand in a public context. It's just a respectful thing to do, especially if it's like to the office of the president as opposed to the person of the president. Like you're kind of shaking hands with a status, not just a human being.
Yeah. Ronald, is Vince Vaughn ever going to do a significant movie again?
I mean,
what if he made?
Yeah.
Well, to be fair, that was in question before this whole.
Yeah.
No, oh no, not to me. What if he made Swingers 2, baby, with Favreau and Vince Vaughn, a little reunion. 25 years later.
Yeah.
Would we be there on the front row? Would we drive to Fort Wayne just to watch it there?
Oh, I'd absolutely drive to Fort Wayne knowing it's going to be a horrible movie because you can't redo that stuff. Knowing that they're going to try to use all the lingo, a bunch of 50-year-old dudes, it's not going to work. We understand that.
Like we do.
And you better believe that me and you are going to be in the front row in Fort Wayne watching it.
100%. Absolutely.
All those
Absolutely.
Things are true. Here's the thing, man. I'm with Pipe, man. I feel like maybe there's something we're missing on this. I mean, I think historically Vaughn has identified as a Republican, which is not going to make him real friendly with,
which
you know,
kills him
Hollywood
in Hollywood anyway. So
kills him anyway, and yeah, I don't know when deal. He's. I mean, so when he's shaking Trump's hand, does he have a little note saying, "You know, call me. You know, we'll hang out. We'll get
call
dinner.
Me,
we'll talk politics." Yeah, I don't know, but so like I just
that.
Feel like we're. I feel like we're missing something because I mean, dude, if anybody comes up to you and puts their hand out, or you're in the presence of somebody. And the only polite thing to do is say hello and shake a hand. I mean, I don't know. I don't know that you wouldn't extend that to anybody. Like, I don't. That's just so weird to me. It's almost like a reflex, right? Like, I mean, we've all shaken hands with people that, like, maybe we're having a hard time with relationally, or things aren't going well, or we've been backstabbed, and you see that person like somewhere, and they put out their hand, and it's just, it's almost like it's a reflexive thing where you just like you put your hand out. And then much less if it's the president of the United States, regardless of your opinion of him. You got all these people around you. What, you're going to make a bigger scene by not putting your hand out and shaking his hand, right? So exactly. It's like, I don't know. I mean, it's not to defend him or not defend him. I just don't know what else I would do in that situation either. I think my hand would go out and I'd be like, you know, pleasure to meet you, you know, whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I'm defending him. I like Vince Vaughn. What can I say? Call me crazy.
Yeah, I like Vince. Yeah. I'd like to see him make another funny movie someday.
I would too, man. I feel like he kind of caught the last wave of funny movies, you know? I think funny movies are canceled, but
There's nothing. We
discussed that humor is canceled because you can't say anything to offend anybody. You know what would be brave? Being a funny comedian. That would be brave. Like, dude, Dave Chappelle, brave.
Chappelle has a lot of stuff to say about that, man. He has a lot of opinions about why comedians should be able to say whatever they want, or else you've now just completely, you know, you've abandoned that art form.
Are there any comedians left who haven't been canceled?
Well, I think if you're as big as Chappelle, you kind of can't be canceled. I mean, he doesn't care. I mean, you can't.
Yeah.
It's like Chappelle canceled just makes Chappelle less canceled technically, because
that's
now everybody's even that much more interested in hearing what he has to say about being canceled.
That's true. That's true.
Boy, he's part of the elite, though. He's elite.
You know who's not canceled? You know who's the opposite of canceled? Dwell Bible, our other sponsor for this program. We started with coffee moguls. We're ending with the preeminent reading the Bible out loud app on the planet. And we are business partners with them, which fills me with pride and with hopefulness. Piper, tell us about Dwell.
Are we allowed to say preeminent about Dwell Bible?
It's the Bible.
Yeah.
If you can't say preeminent about that, what can you say about it?
A Bible app. It's not the Bible. I'm just asking. I'm not criticizing.
Dude, we're getting deep. We're getting deep into the theological. We're getting Terry Malick on this.
You know what? I'm going to be brave and stick with preeminent.
All right.
I'm going to just stare off into
space silently like a character in a Terry Malick movie. You can
mutter inscrutable things.
You can interpret my silence any way you want.
Well, I'm going to be like Nolan with no depth and just ask a bunch of questions. So.
There you go. I like it. Chris Nolan was emergent.
Oh. No, he's not emergent. He'd make worse movies if he was emergent.
Questions are better than answers. He was emergent. Piper, tell us about Dwell Bible.
All right. So, yes, Dwell is definitely not canceled. And, in fact, it's a great subscription service. So, instead of canceling, you can subscribe. I feel like that's a nice little parallel.
That's such a good segue.
Yeah, I know. I was feeling good about that one. So listeners, Dwell Bible is the preeminent. We're going to go with that preeminent audio Bible app. You can subscribe for less than $20 a year by using the link. If you go to dwellapp.io/happyrent, you'll see there it's a 33% discount. It's less than $20 a year. It has multiple versions. It has multiple narrators. It has musical backgrounds. It has listening plans to help you get through the Bible in a year or a shorter amount of time, longer amount of time, kind of whatever works for you, just to keep you on track. It has tools built in to help with memorization, study, reflection, all of that. So again, go to dwellapp.io/happyrant. Check it out. There's also a lifetime subscription, so you can pay. It's about $100. Have it in perpetuity, so you get the advantage of every upgrade and every addition they make. And they're doing regular feature updates, regularly adding new readers, things like that. They're partnering with different authors and things like that to bring in some of their favorite scriptures. So again, dwellapp.io/happyrant. Check it out and get your discount.
Good work, Pipe.
Wow.
Good promo work. And good radio work by all three of you non-brave gentlemen.
Are you speaking in the third person to yourself?
Yeah, I am. I'm speaking to my, like, the omniscient third person narrator.
Are we allowed to call that omniscient?
I don't know. I'm just
know if we go through life asking, are we allowed to? We should just
the answer is always no for us. Yeah, the answer no, is always you're not. No. Boys, we've done what we always do on this program, which is wander to and fro throughout several topics. And until next time.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
I'm Don Hawkins, and I once heard Chick-fil-A founder Truett Cathy say, "You can tell if a person needs encouragement, check to see if they're breathing." I'd like to invite you to my weekly podcast, Encouragement for You, featuring encouraging guests like Dr. Greg and Aaron Smalley, Dan Cathy, the late Dr. Frank Menrith, Josh McDowell, and more. To subscribe to my weekly Encouragement for You podcast, go to lifeaudio.com. That's lifeaudio.com.